Hello and welcome to the September 3rd edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're shaking things up. I'm Joan Pardis, your host today, and Scott Burden is the producer and engineer of the show. We'll be chatting with some people, Claire Fordyce and Nikki Love, for about the Early Learning Fair. We'll learn about the St. Vincent de Paul Walk for the Friends of the Poor. Then we'll talk with Sarah Lewis of UAF Cooperative Extension about how to start a specialty food business in Alaska. And last, we'll talk with singer-songwriter John Elliott, who's coming in this week. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Democrat Byron Mallott, a Tlingit man, will no longer be running for governor of Alaska. Instead, he'll be the running mate for conservative independent candidate Bill Walker. Reactions among his supporters are mixed. KSKA's Ann Hillman reports.
If Mallott had run on his own and won, he would have been Alaska's first Native governor. But he says he joined with Walker because it greatly increases their chances of beating Parnell. Mallott says they're working against partisan politics to unite Alaskans.
It's hard in political life to ask for this because of recent or a long history. But we're trying to change that.
Mallott says he's comfortable with Walker's views on issues that impact the Alaska Native community, like tribal sovereignty, subsistence, and energy costs.
During the course of the campaign, where we've appeared together, these issues have been raised several times in substantial detail. I never was uncomfortable based on my own beliefs and values and understanding of those issues with any answer that Bill Walker gave.
One of the Unity Ticket's major issues is addressing the high cost of energy in rural Alaska. On Walker's campaign website, it says he supports allowing the permitting process to go through for Pebble Mine, a contentious issue in Bristol Bay that could impact subsistence fishing there. Comments on Mallott's Facebook page are mixed, with some supporting and others doubting the decision. Walker's original running mate, Craig Fleener, is also an Alaska Native. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Annenberg Foundation has donated an object to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. The item was purchased at a Paris auction last year. It appears to be part of an old Tlingit bentwood box. According to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, such a box would have held a clan's sacred objects or possibly the objects used by a shaman. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell says staff were stunned by the donation. She says this has never happened before and that the panel was donated to them because clan affiliation could not be determined. The Institute plans to reach out to Native people in Southeast Alaska to see if it can be tied to a certain clan. If it can, the object will be repatriated. The sale by the Paris Auction House upset many tribes, including the Hopi tribe in Arizona, which tried to stop the auction. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute also tried to intervene. The Annenberg Foundation secretly purchased items with the intent of returning them to tribes. 20 Native American destinations are nominated for USA Today's Top 10 Reader's Choice Awards. A New Mexico Pueblo is among those up for Best Native American Experience in the U.S. Polly Dinetclaw has more.
Since late August, people from across the country have had the opportunity to vote for their favorite Native American experience, and Taos Pueblo is vying for the number one spot of top 10. This Pueblo has been frequently nominated and recognized for their unique Native American experience. Ilona Spruce, tourism director, says the Pueblo attracts many people to its annual feast days and dances, as well as guided tours of the Pueblo, which have been continuously inhabited for more than 1,000 years. While Taos Pueblo is a spot for tourism, Spruce says they make it a priority to respect the tribe's privacy.
We've been able to maintain our cultural identity, and so we still have that, and we do share that identity to an extent. Not all the way, though, of course, but we do share that identity with the community that comes in here.
This nomination comes after their recent recognition by CNN as one of the best places to experience Native American culture. Other nominees include the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage, the Cherokee Heritage Center in Oklahoma, and the Miccosukee Indian Village in Florida. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. The weather, as of now, is showers becoming scattered this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, lows 48 to 54, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Thursday is mostly cloudy, chance of rain, and Thursday night is rain likely. So it's been a bit rainy. Yesterday was lovely, and boy, was there a bite in the air. So we're definitely moving into fall. As soon as that cloud cover picks up, we are definitely moving into fall. Speaking of fall, there's an early learning fair. It's back to school time, and we have two ladies to chat about that. We have Nikki Love and Claire Fordyce joining us in the studio. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Hello.
So let's talk about the Early Learning Fair. It is Thursday, September 4th, that's this Thursday, 4 to 7, tomorrow, at Harborview and Elementary School, which is right down by the bridge. What's the purpose of this fair?
Well, the purpose is really to engage families in the community with the resources that are available to them. So there will be folks from Juneau Public Health and Catholic Community Child Care Assistance, Planned Parenthood, Search Dental, but there will also be lots of fun activities for kids. So we welcome families to come down. It's really targeting children ages birth to five, and it's going to be a really fun time.
Okay, so when you talk early learning, you're really talking early learning, like birth, obviously, from the moment the new person comes into the world until five, but I'm sure families, older siblings are welcome and so on
absolutely.
And so forth. So if you're targeting children and their families birth to five, what are the services that families can expect or learn about?
The fair's mainly I see it as a celebration of Juneau and a pulse of who we are and how healthy we are, and supporting parents, you know, just really being cheerleaders, because it's really hard work. and sometimes given our weather, it's especially hard work. So for me, it's just a really fun community event. Parents meet each other, they meet all the collaborators, and there's dozens that we have lined up. And it's in the gym, so the agencies have a table, there'll be interactive things, there'll be giveaways, prizes. It's just come on down and celebrate us, celebrate who you are, and show off your kid and show off your family.
That sounds great. That's Claire Fordyce of Head Start, who is just chatting with us. So there's fun learning activities for kids. There's resources for parents and representatives of all the different agencies in town as well. And then there's these free developmental screenings and free hearing and vision screenings. Can we talk a little bit about that? What does that mean, and what's the benefit for our family to get a screening at that age that we're talking about, birth to five?
Sure. It's really important to get a screening because, you know, if a child has vision or hearing issues or maybe a developmental delay, the earlier that that's identified, the sooner that they can get supports and really, you know, start kindergarten successfully and have, you know, a richer, more whole experience as a young child. So it's really important to come down for that. And they are free. You'll come in the door. It'll be very apparent where to go. People will help you, you know, find the classrooms that those are located in. There'll be a special prize for the children who go through the screenings. And there are also snacks available for everyone. Wanted to make sure I got that in there.
And snacks are good. And that's from 4 to 7. All righty. And then the door prizes and fun gifts. That sounds fun. And then it seems like, wow, the partners just are all over the place.
Yeah. It's like this is a huge event. And last year, there were so many two-year-olds. We're really looking forward to meeting them as three-year-olds this year. And, you know, we live and breathe early intervention or, you know, supporting parents as early as possible. Not every child develops in every domain at the same time, you know, in a quick way. There's a lot to learn, a lot to do. So some kids are faster at, you know, moving and maybe slower at speaking, and that's totally fine. But a lot of kindergartens, preschool, and I know Head Start, who I work with, we require a lot of screenings to be done before we allow before children walk into our classrooms, and then within 6 weeks. So in Head Start, we have kids do a social emotional screening. The parent does that, and the teacher, within 6 weeks of meeting them, a developmental screening, and a hearing and a vision. And sometimes that's a lot on a parent's plate, so let us help you meet those, you know, requirements and come and make it a great fun time. And Infant Learning will be there doing hearing. The Lions Club will be doing vision screenings. There'll be school district and Head Start staff. So we want to make it as painless and as fun as possible.
It sounds like it. Absolutely fantastic resource to go in and have all those vision screening developmental tests done for free all at one time, and then also learn about the many different resources that go probably or a very wide spectrum as far as resources. So you just had a little bit about Head Start. Nikki, do you want to say anything about AEYC? And first we could start what that acronym means.
Sure.
And then what you do for that agency?
It means the Association for the Education of Young Children. And we are a nonprofit affiliated with NIAC, the National Association for the Education of Young Children. We have many different grants. One of them is the Parents as Teachers grant. We'll have staff from that program signing parents up for that. And we also have the Child Care Resource and Referral grant, so we help connect families with child care resources. And the food program grant, and I work with that as well, and we help to get healthy foods into the homes of child care providers. And then the partnerships for families and children, which I also work with, and that's collaborating with about 22 different nonprofits in town through the support of Best Beginnings. And so that's really kind of the group that's collaborating to bring this fair into being.
Okay, so obviously Nikki does the work of like three people. And if that's not worth the price of admission, which is free, just what the two of you do, I don't know what is. So it sounds like Juno at its best, with all the resources in one place, making it easy for parents to navigate the world of parenting, early learning, and getting your kids ready for school or not, just getting ready for life, because it could be infant, you know.
School readiness is ready for life.
Exactly.
And parents are their child's first, best, and last teacher, so they're the partner.
That's it. Yeah. It sounds great. And also, you know, just you think, oh, well, you know, my infant who's, you know, so young, under 6 months old, it's like, as a new parent, it's great to have people coo over your baby and tell you how wonderful they are, and just get all these resources in one place.
We even have door prizes for infants. So there are fabulous games and prizes available for all the ages.
Sounds really
worth coming to.
This sounds great. So this is tomorrow night, 4 to 7, at Harborview Elementary School, the Early Learning Fair, and it is free. Well, thank you, ladies, for dropping by today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay,
we're going to go to Writer's Almanac, and then we'll be back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 3rd of September, 2014. It was on this day, 1802, William Wordsworth wrote one of his rare poems about a city. He was on his way to France from his home in the Lake District. He was passing through London on his way to visit Annette Vaillant, the French girl with whom he had fathered a daughter when he was a young man, and he looked at London. And he wrote, "Ships, towers, domes, theatres, and temples lie open unto the fields and to the sky, all bright and glittering in the smokeless air. Never did the sun more beautifully steep in his first splendor valley, rock, or hill. Ne'er saw I, never felt a calm so deep. It's the birthday of the best-selling author Malcolm Gladwell, born in Fareham, England, 1963, raised in Canada, son of a Jamaican psychotherapist, a British engineering professor. His first book was The Tipping Point. Since then, he's written Blink and Outliers. He said, the hope with Tipping Point was it would help the reader understand that real change was possible. With Blink, I wanted to get people to take the enormous power of their intuition seriously. My wish with Outliers is that it makes us understand how much of a group project success is. His most recent book is called David and Goliath. It's the birthday of the short story writer Sarah Orne Jewett, born in South Berwick, Maine, 1849, to a family of shipbuilders and seafarers. Author of The Country of the Pointed Firs, Sarah Orne Jewett, who said, you must find your own quiet center of life and write from that. It's the birthday of Louis Sullivan, Louis Henry Sullivan, born in Boston, 1856, who gave us the words form follows function. It's the birthday of the novelist Alison Lurie, born Chicago, 1926, author of Imaginary Friends, The War Between the Tates, Foreign Affairs, stories of highly educated protagonists negotiating the pitfalls of their personal relationships. Here's a poem for today by Sheila Packer, North Star. In Hanko, Finland, a young woman boards the vessel in the Baltic for a ship across the Atlantic. The North Star shines in the sky. She's carrying in her valise a change of clothes, a packet of seeds, and the sauna dipper. Distance pours between constellations, between English words on her tongue, through storms and sun. In New York City, she buys a one-way ticket, boards the train going across the continent, arrives on an inland sea. The winter ground underfoot is familiar with frost as she transfers to a northbound along the Vermilion Trail in Minnesota. Ahead of her waits a man, a house to be built, and a fire that burns it down. Ahead, 11 children to bear, a few she must bury, the cows in the barn needing to be milked, unbroken ground, only hers to till, above her the North Star, inside the Aurora Borealis, northern banners waving welcome. North Star, a poem by Sheila Packer, from Night Train, Red Dust, Poems of the Iron Range, published by Wildwood River Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, and welcome back to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Scott Burden is the producer and engineer of today's show, and I am Joan Pardis. I am your host today. We're changing things up from my usual Monday chat with Juno. Our next guest is Ida Barnack. She is a board member of St. Vincent de Paul, and she is here to talk about their annual fundraiser, Walk for the Friends of the Poor, this Saturday. Hi, Ida. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
So tell me about this event. This is the fifth annual Walk for the Poor?
This is our fifth event for the annual Walk for the Poor, and the purpose is to raise money for the less fortunate in Juneau. We give rental assistance. We give aid for energy assistance, lights and oil. And we do some medical assistance. The walk begins at 10 o'clock registration. is at 9 o'clock, and the walk is from the St. Paul's Catholic Church parking lot up toward Fred Meyer's. It's a very short walk.
And it's a one-way walk? You walk from St. Vincent's de Paul to Fred Meyer's?
We walk from St. Paul's parking lot.
Oh, I see.
You don't have to cross the street or anything. It's just along the path, and it's not all the way to Fred Meyer's, just part of the way to Fred Meyer's and back.
Sounds great. So that's this Saturday. So registration is at 9 o'clock at the church.
At St. Paul's.
Okay. And then you take the walk at 10 o'clock. Right. And I understand there's not a fee to register, but
there
donations.
There is not a fee, but we're asking for donations. and there'll be door prizes at the walk. And then after the walk, there will be food.
Oh, great. All righty. And St. Vincent's de Paul, they, as you said, they provide rental assistance and energy assistance, lights and electricity, holiday baskets.
And holiday baskets. And we also run a shelter, which is extremely expensive to run. But this is the only place in town where people with children who have no place else to go, can come and stay.
How many families can that facility host?
We only have 26 rooms, and there's always a waiting list. So if somebody can't afford, we do charge a rent for these rooms, but if they can't afford the rent, then they can still stay.
That's where the donations come in. That's where our
rental assistance goes. And so we provide 34,000 something in rental assistance last year.
Wow. So, that's wonderful.
So we do need the funds, and if somebody wishes to give a donation, they can donate either by sending a check to St. Vincent de Paul, 8617 Teal Street, or drop into the thrift store and leave a donation, or go online, svdpjuno.org, and there will be a link to give a donation, or they can call the thrift store, 789-5914, and give a donation via credit card.
That sounds like wonderful. So if you can't show up for the walk, you could always donate.
Yes.
So how many people were participated in the walk last year?
I think about 42. It always is raining. We're hoping for it not to be pouring down rain. But it's a short walk.
It's a short walk, and it's for a good cause. Yeah. And these fundraisers, this particular fundraiser, is a huge fundraiser for St. Vincent de Paul. Last year, they raised a record number of $17,000 from this one walk. So
yes,
by all means, throw your pennies, dollars, and cents at St. Vincent de Paul, and they'll be put to good use.
We accept any donations, just a few cents to any large amount. We're asking businesses to sponsor the walk, too. And some businesses have come forward, and they're very generous.
That's great. And if somebody's listening and they own a business, or they're a general manager of a business, who should they call?
They should call 321-0208, and we'll certainly be happy to accept any donation.
That sounds great. So that's the Walk for the Friends of the Poor this Saturday, the 6th, at 9 a.m. for registration, 10 a.m. for a very, very short walk, and all donations will be used here in Juneau to help St. Vincent's reach out to the people.
To people who are less fortunate.
Exactly, the people who are less fortunate, so who need the help, the rental assistance, the holiday baskets, energy assistance, and sometimes even medical.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds great. Ida, thank you so much for what you do and for coming in today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
I was born one morning, the rain a pouring down. Heard my mammy say to the pappy, let's call him John Henry Brown. Walk on, boy. Walk on down the road. Ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna help you carry your load. My pappy told me some advice I'd like to give to you. Son, find a good woman, be good to her, and she's gonna be good to you. Walk on, boy. Walk on down the road. Ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna help you carry on. My mammy and pappy, just about the age of 10. Lord, I got me a job of working on the levee, doting water for the hard-working men. Walk on, boys. Walk on down the road. Ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna help you carry your load. Ask you just who is that fella Brown. You can tell him I'm the boy that left his hammer smoking where he beat that old steam rail down. Walk on, boy. Walk on down the road. Ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna help you carry your load.
Be sure to tune in on Saturdays to KTOO to hear some new shows on the air. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has moved to 10 a.m., and at 11, we're now bringing you NPR's latest hit, the TED Radio Hour. At 2 p.m., catch the hot news show, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. Information on the changes are at ktoo.org.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It is 3:28 p.m. on September 3rd. Our next guest is Sarah Lewis. She is here from the UIF Cooperative Extension to talk about this new class, starting and operating a specialty food business in Alaska. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much, Jen.
So tell me, starting and operating a specialty food business, what is it?
Well, a specialty food business is one where it's usually a smaller scale and it's using higher quality ingredients. So we've actually got several really wonderful specialty food businesses here in town already. People will be familiar, of course, with, although they've gone a little bit bigger, but there's, Wild Oven and Chef Steph. People like that who have taken specific foods and turned them into a business. And so what this is looking at that business side of it, as well as some of the idea side. So if you just have an idea for a food, we'll be, talking about how to formulate recipes and things like that as well.
Interesting. So let's talk about what the workshop's about and then talk about who would be the perfect target audience, which you touched on a little bit. First of all, it's a video conference.
It is. It is. So what this is being sponsored, if you will, by UAF, where we're University of Alaska Fairbanks is where the Cooperative Extension is headquartered out of. And although we do have a Juneau office, we can talk about that in a minute. But so Kate Idzorik up in the Fairbanks office, she is our food marketing specialist and just food specialist in general, in terms of food entrepreneurship and formulating recipes and testing foods and things like that. So she's actually leading the course with Quentin Fong, who's actually out of Kodiak, I believe. And so the two of them, I mean, this is one of the magic of modern technology. They actually, we offered this about 6 months ago or so, and we offer it here in Juneau as well as a couple other places in the state through the university video conferencing system. So we have a classroom, classroom 115 in the Egan building, where all the students come, watch the class. There's actually the ability to have some back and forth in that, and they even like have you make sure you have your cell phone, so if you have questions, you can send those in, things like that.
So it's in real time.
It's in real time,
but it's not like an online course where you're in the privacy of your own home or office. You're going, so you'll have other participants,
right,
and then also access to some live teachers,
yes,
as well.
So for example, not necessarily teachers, but people, local folks, like we're going to be having Bruce Gazaway from the local DEC, who deals with food permitting and things like that. He's going to try to come to a couple of the classes just to introduce himself.
Subject matter experts.
That's right. Thank you.
There we go.
And I will be there as well, because we are an excellent resource at the Cooperative Extension locally in terms of how to get your labeling done after this class happens. If you have follow-up questions as you actually start developing your product or your business, you can call on us. So we'll have some of that. So there is a little bit of local connection here.
Okay. And the dates are September 16th, 18th, 23rd, 25th, and 30th. It's 5:30 to 8. It's out at UAS. I'm sure you could find this out online somewhere.
You can find it out online. We have a Facebook page, Juneau Cooperative Extension. Also, UAF Cooperative Extension has a web page. Our website is www.uaf.edu/CES, and then you hit the Juneau button.
Go to the Facebook page.
Go to the Facebook page.
So if people, let's say they have an idea or they have a business but they have a new idea, what actually are they going to learn in this class? What's the syllabus like?
Well, it's where food and business come together. So you're both going to be learning about some of those early things you need to think about, like the recipe formulation or what types of permits you might need for different types of food and how big your business is going to be. But also there's things like how to figure out the financing, how to get the bank financing, how to figure out how to make money on what you're making, and business models, as well as sales types, like whether you're just going to do farmers markets or whether you might actually have a cart, for example. So it goes through all of those things, permitting and feasibility, promoting and pricing, how to make your booth at the farmer's market look good.
Right, so it's everything from the financing,
yep,
and permitting to the business planning and marketing,
right,
and the promotion and pricing, the
right,
four P's of marketing.
Indeed.
So is this really right on the flyer that it's $50?
It's $50, yeah, for
okay,
five classes. And so basically the classes are Tuesdays and Thursdays, starting on September 16th from 5:30 to 8, like you mentioned. And, yeah, it's $50. And pre-registration is recommended, just so that we know, because if we get no one pre-registered, I will probably go out there, but if no one shows up within a half an hour, we're going to cancel it for the rest of the time. So it would be really good to know if people are going to be joining us. But you can also register right there at it. But please do pre-register. That would
okay,
be great.
Is there a number where somebody could get a hold of you if they,
yes,
have a question?
Yes. You can. The phone number you can call is 1-877-520-5211. And you can also register online. This is, it'd be better if you went to our Facebook page and got the flyer, but it's a bit.ly. So it's bit.ly/CES-workshops. So go to our Facebook page and get the flyer, and you can get all that information about how to register.
That sounds great. So I know that you mentioned just a few of the Juneau small businesses that are involved with specialty foods. There's quite a few, and
there's quite a few.
Like Copa with their ice cream comes to mind, and some others. But this is like following like a national trend
that the
specialty food market. I mean, it's been going on in major urban centers for quite a while, but has it really kind of impacted more than just Juneau here in Alaska?
It definitely has. I teach cottage foods classes throughout Southeast, and that's one of the first classes that people ask for when I say I'm coming to their community, like Yakutat or
Haines.
Well, that's part of the specialty foods, but it's for those people who are specifically doing things that are considered non-hazardous. So if you're doing jams and jellies and you're just going to sell them at a farmer's market, it's how to start that kind of smaller specialty food business. People are very interested in it. It's part of the local food movement as well, because most of the time specialty foods, although especially in a place like Juneau, you might not be getting the ingredients or all of the ingredients locally. I mean, Copa, he tries to get as much as he can locally, and most of these folks do. And it's easier when you're doing a small business. You're not trying to get the volume that a larger business would, and it just keeps it more manageable for people who are just wanting to start their own business. Some, of course, expand, but many are very happy to stay at that size.
Right, like Wild Oven. They have their retail business, and now they're exclusively wholesale.
That's right.
So it's very interesting. Okay, so that is the starting and operating a specialty food business in Alaska, and anyone who knows me, don't worry, I am not going to join, which is a good thing. September 16th, 18th, 23rd, 25th, and 30th, 5:30 to 8. Cost is $50. And before I let you go, so UAF Cooperative Extension, okay?
Yes.
I have an idea of what that is, but what is your presence here in Juneau?
Basically, the Cooperative Extension is the community education arm of the university, of the land-grant university. Land-grant universities throughout the states each have a Cooperative Extension associated with it.
What's a land-grant?
Land-grant universities, it's like 150 years old. You're going back to Lincoln here. It's when land was granted to a state so that they could start a university. And then use that sort of as the starting point. It's
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, let's come back.
There you go. That's a whole other.
Yes, yeah. But here in Juneau, the Cooperative Extension.
Well, so people are often familiar with Master Gardeners,
yes.
4-H, the food preservation classes, which I do through community schools. I'm in the Family and Community Development Program, and that's everything from home energy to home finance, child development, basically whatever a community needs.
So it's
filling gaps.
It's you, Sarah Lewis.
Yeah, myself and Darren
Snyder
is our agriculture, horticulture, and 4-H agent.
Okay.
And we are for all of Southeast. We do have an office in Sitka as well, but we don't have an agent there right now.
Okay.
And so Sarah Lewis and Darren Snyder, we are the extension agents for Southeast.
And to know what you offer, the best bet is the Facebook page.
The Facebook page, or giving us a call as well. Susie at the front desk, 523-3280. She's awesome. She'll give you all of the information. We have lots of publications. We're at 450 Whittier. So it's the public safety building. So you go in the front door, go straight back, and there we are. And we've got hundreds of publications on everything from jams and jellies to how to start a community group.
Sounds great. And so if somebody is a Facebook user and they go to Facebook, they would look up UAF Cooperative Extension?
Juneau. You'd want to make sure to have Juneau in there,
okay.
But each of the districts also have their own Facebook pages. So
you can
Juneau
learn about
Cooperative
Kodiak.
Extension. You could, which are all wonderful.
All right, so that's great background, but the reason Sarah's here today is to talk about that starting and operating a specialty food business in Alaska. First class is September 16th. It's $50. It's 5:30 to 8. On what day of the week was that?
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Tuesdays and Thursdays for a two-week span.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds great.
Yep.
Sarah, thanks so much for
all you do, you
and Darren. And we're going to go to Bird Note, and then we'll be right back with our last guest, John Elliott, and we're going to have a telephone interview with him, which is pretty exciting. He's a great singer-songwriter. Okay, Bird Note, and then we'll be back.
This is Bird Note. One damp evening, you pull into a parking lot. And there, on the asphalt, sits a pied-billed grebe, a water bird that you'd normally see on a lake or pond. The grebe struggles and flaps, but cannot fly. About the same time, on the Hawaiian island of Kauai, a resident out for a walk finds a newelled shearwater, another water bird, stranded on a tennis court. What's going on here? Well, seabirds like grebes and shearwaters cannot take flight from land. It has to do with their center of gravity and weight. Their feet are set far back on their bodies, and they have long wings, so they must first patter and splash across the surface of the water to build up enough speed to become airborne. And what is the attraction of a parking lot or tennis court? Well, to a bird flying at night, they resemble bodies of water, especially if their surfaces are wet. Even more so if made to glisten by artificial light. Young birds on their first flights are especially prone to these mistakes. Stranded seabirds will not survive without a helping hand. To find out how to reach your local bird rescue group, start at birdnote.org.
The University of Alaska Southeast is pleased to announce the first presenter for the Fall 2014 Evening at Egan Lecture Friday Night Series. Thai activist Sulak Sivaraksa presents The Wisdom of Sustainability, Consumerism, Capitalism, and Climate Change. Sivaraksa is an advocate for social, environmental, and political justice around the world. Friday, September 5th, 7 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, free and open to the public.
Somewhere out there in the world tonight, there's a man hungry and sick and frozen with fright, who is trying to cross the United States border. I'm up here on the fourth floor tonight. I'm hungry, I'm sick, and I'm frozen with fright. I'm trying to get my hilarious life in order. And I know what the score is. And I know what a war is. People die in a war. It's all happened before. People die in a war. It's all happened before. Last we spoke, I made a terrible joke. You laughed, but you knew it was a terrible joke. There was a time not that long ago when all of my jokes were good ones. So maybe I lost it in the back of that truck, or that night we swam naked in the lake, and we stuck to each other, and we clutched and we kissed, and we knew we could make it. And I know what war is. People lose in a war. It's all happened before. People lose in a war. It's all happened before. Got an eyelash, let me get it before I go. And I said, wait a minute, let me get it, I'll make a wish and blow. I'd give anything to know what that wish was.
Somewhere on another planet tonight, I'm fairly certain there's intelligent life. And they're using their time and their tests to figure out what love is.
Well, that was a song by John Elliott, who is coming to Juneau tomorrow for KRNN Spotlight Series. It is tomorrow, Thursday, September 4th, from 7 to 9, and it's at the Goldtown Nick. Doors open at 6:30. You do need tickets, $10 in advance. You can do that online, or $12 at the door. John is joining us. He's based out of San Francisco these days. He's joining us by phone. And that, what we just listened to, was the score from his American in Love CD. Hey, John, how are you today?
Hey, John, I'm great. How are you doing?
Very good. We're very excited for you coming to Juneau. That was a great song. I've been listening to your recording since I heard that I was going to interview you today, and I have to say, you are one amazing singer-songwriter. I have to say, I hate to be like your mom, but I'm going to do a little PR. There's quotes here from Brilliant Voice in Contemporary Post-Seinfeld Eyebrow Rock, and then one that I really love is, John is one of the best singer-songwriters out there, period. So I think that's great. And after listening to your stuff, I have to say I'm a fan. So, John, thank you for coming up to Juneau tomorrow. So can we?
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
So let's start. You're a guitarist. Is that true?
Yeah, I play guitar and piano, too, actually, and then sing along with myself.
Okay. And how many albums have you put out?
The live album counts. The live album would be the 8th album.
Wow. And how long?
Go ahead.
No, you go.
That's all I was going to say is, yes, that's a lot of albums.
It's a lot of albums. And how long have you been doing it? When was the first album released?
First album was 2004, so this is the 10-year anniversary.
That's great. And so,
I think part of it, you know, I learned how to record when I was in high school and in college, and I was getting my career started in the age of home recording, so I was able to make them myself, you know. It was a new thing at the time. Now everybody can make their own, but I didn't really think too much about other ways to do it. I just, since I had the ability to do it and I had songs I wanted to put out, I just did it that way, you know.
Yeah, that's great, because also, like, after the post-label dominant era, there's a lot more interesting music out there, in my opinion.
I would agree, yeah.
So, and your writing is beautiful. I love to read, and I love to write, and your writing is just really arresting, as well as your delivery in the songs. And so you travel these days? Like, what's your life like, you know, these days? A little snapshot.
The snapshot of the last week was I had shows down up in Talkeetna and then Seward. And then I had built in my camping trip for the summer in Seward. So I was on the water down in Seward. It was beautiful. Apparently I got really lucky. I guess it's not usually sunny down there, but it was perfectly sunny the whole time.
That's great. And you could expect the same here. Not. It's been pretty rainy. But you're not coming to Juneau for the weather. You're coming to check it out. Will it be your first time in Juneau?
No, I played about a year and a half ago. I was there, and I played it at the college, and then I played at a place called The Rookery.
Oh, cool. I'm sorry, I missed
it. Yeah, it was cool. They moved all the chairs and the tables out, and it was really neat. It was an awesome show.
So now that you just went camping in Seward, so do we all have to, like, listen to your next album? Is Alaska going to be in your next album? Are you going to write about us?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking that. You know, I have some songs about fishing, so I guess that's the closest I've got.
Yeah, we call it fishing here. We don't use
right,
a G. We call it fishing.
You know, apparently it was a big deal because the salmon were all jumping down in the Resurrection Bay there, and people were I've never seen anything like it. It was like a fisherman, and they were probably 4 feet apart from each other, all up and down there fishing. And, I mean, people were getting huge hauls, you know. I mean, I've never, like, piles of fish next to them. And they, you know, and this is all, I'm sure, regular occurrences to you guys, but it was funny to watch, you know, like, really hard, heavy fishing, you know, and they're sweating, and they pull the fish in, and they stop on the fish's head, and it's pretty high contact.
It is. But, you know, Southeast's a little different than that. We don't like being elbow to elbow.
you're a little more reserved.
Well, no, there's a lot of deep sea fishing. You know, there's a lot of boat fishing. And then as far as fly fishing, Scott's raising his, Scott Burden's the producer and engineer of the show. I don't know much about fly fishing. Actually, I don't know much about fishing at all, except I'm an enthusiast. But, you know, most people here, because there's all this water here, we kind of like, okay, I'm fishing over here. You're going to move over there. But there's but there is some fly fishing. We should get the fly fishing expert in here to do that. But let's get back to music, okay? So I really am arrested by your voice, your delivery, and your writing and your musical ability. You want to talk a little bit about your influences? Because you have such a broad range.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for mentioning the lyrics and the writing part of it, because I realized that the literature aspect of it is actually a big part of music for me, and I realized also that I'm kind of in a minority in that, you know? Like, I've played with drummers and people who don't even listen to the lyrics. They don't even listen to it, and the lyrics are kind of the first thing that I hear, you know? And so the influences have always been people who I like that too, you know, like Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan and Neil Young, and, you know, artists who you can tell their great thought has gone into the lyrical content.
Yeah. Those people are been around a long time. You have any newer influences that also, I mean, those are iconic, you know, but they're if you're saying that you started recording in high school and you have 10 albums out, I'm assuming that you're a little younger than those people.
No, yeah, I am younger than. I mean, you know, but they're the best.
Yeah, they
totally
are.
I mean, it's like you might as well listen to the best. I mean, now to say it, there's a number of amazing contemporary singer songwriters and people like Amaius Mitchell is one, and Danny Schmidt down in Austin, Texas is one. Corey Brannan is one. I mean, amazing people that are writing incredible things now.
Yeah, that sounds great. And so for you, it's the lyrics first and then music? Is that what your process is like?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, in terms of writing, they come in all different ways. Sometimes it's a melody, sometimes it's a chord progression, sometimes it's the words. But really, I can't get around a song if the lyrics don't do it for me. I can't get into it.
Right, I understand. So let's listen a little bit, just a little snippet of The American West, and then I want to talk a little bit about the format tomorrow, about what people could expect.
Okay,
so we're
cool.
Going to move to the song, and then we're going to come right back. We're talking on the phone with John Elliott, who is going to be part of KRNN Spotlight Series tomorrow, the 4th, Thursday, 7 to 9 at the Gold Town Nick, and here's his The American West.
Trevor's starting a list. My fortune's a fist. Whatever it was, it's gone now. Colorado was dumb. The locals were wealthy. The mountains were white. The people were white. It's a good day to be in the American West. I'm closer to home than I ever get. I'm not through with this yet. I was weak in the winter, stuck in the South. Born in the North with a Catholic mouth. Mother said, son, you're lucky to live here. You're lucky to live here. We had to prove it. We had to beat Britain again. Maybe take Canada too. The Indians sided with them.
Oh, wow. I wish we could listen more to more of that, but we're running out of time. We're chatting with John Elliott, and we were just listening to one of his songs, The American West. John is going to be chatting with Katie Bousler, who is the host tomorrow night. Irene Muller is the opening act. She is a local musician. She's wonderful. She'll be there.
She's great, too. She's a great writer.
Right. And then so the format tomorrow will be kind of like MTV Unplugged, but chats with, you know, Katie about the process for John and John playing. John, I have to say, I've been listening to your work for the past couple of days since I knew I was going to interview you, and I have to say, you and Paul Simon, you seem to have this, like, when I listen to you, I'm like, wow, he's got the storytelling and the chops of Paul Simon. So I just want to say, is he one of your influences?
That's a huge compliment. But no, he's not. That's the influence that people have said more than anyone else. So I kind of went back after people started to say that and pay more attention to him. And obviously he's incredible. But no, I actually did not. The only things we had growing up in my house were Mannheim Steamroller Christmas and Chicago's Greatest Hits.
Oh, my gosh. All right, no comment. I was just saying that's kind of the storytelling and the emotion and kind of the unfolding of the kind of being, like, transported somewhere. So I'm really looking forward to meet you tomorrow night. And so that's from 7 to 9 at the Goldtown, Nick. Get your tickets because they do sell out. It's $10. It's a very intimate chat, and John will be there. So, John, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to end with Back Where I Was, another cut from one of John's 8 CDs, and I'll be here tomorrow night. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, John. I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds great.
Well, it was summertime. We had too much time. We got ourselves in trouble. We went to the beach and we crashed a car, and then we crashed another. And when it hit me, I could not think. I decided I should hide away. So I did what I could. I did what I did because it was easy. And I was surprised before I knew it.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Well, thank you for joining us. Scott Burden, producer and engineer of the show. Joan Pardis, your host today on Juno Afternoon. It's 3:58 p.m., and the updated weather is mostly cloudy, scattered showers tonight, areas of fog late, lows around 49. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, areas of fog in the morning, scattered showers in the morning, then chance of rain in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, rain. Friday, rain. Highs around 56. Friday night, rain likely. And Saturday and Saturday night, rain. Sounds like fall in Juno. Anyway, K2's got a lot of stuff happening here. You've got the KRNN showcase tomorrow night, and then join Shona Strasser for her Thursday show. Yeah, let's hear it for Shona. She'll be talking about the Iliad at Perseverance, where's volunteer advocacy training. She'll be chatting with Chef Steph, who we talked about a little bit today during the specialty food section today. She's be talking about her First Friday event. And then Kindred Post also has a First Friday event happening this First Friday, and of course the Arts Roundup. So thanks for joining us. Have a great day. Next up, All Things Considered.
Oh, wait. You say don't overanalyze it as if it were that easy.